Welcome, everyone, to the Space Jam.
Welcome to Space Jam with Bugs Bunny. That was a terrible movie. All right, try again.
Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining us, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
In space.
In space. No one can hear you podcast.
No, actually, I've been kind of sick, and I've been taking some Robitussin, so I'm actually in space.
Oh, now Robitussin will fix anything.
It's my perfect drink.
So we have two guests with us this week from the recently Kickstarter-launched game called The Mandate. We have Ole, I'm not going to try and say your last name again. Ole, who is the executive producer and lead designer, and Garrett AJ, who is the art director and concept artist. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, thank you.
I want to thank you both for joining us, especially you, Ole, because it is 5 o'clock Los Angeles time where I am, but it is 2 a.m. Slovakian time where you are?
Yeah, Central European time, yep.
Wow. How are things in Central Europe right now? Gotta be better over here.
Kind of quiet, kind of dark.
They gotta be better than they are over here right now, because it's a mess over here. But yeah, your game, I gotta say, your game kind of took a lot of people by surprise, because it felt like it came out of nowhere a week or so ago. Like, I'd never heard of it, I'll be honest, and then all these people are like, Brian, have you heard of this? Have you heard of this? Have you heard of this? And I'm like, no, but I'll go look. And so far, you have my money. Or you hopefully will. if we can keep it. Yeah, but you started about a week ago, right?
13 days ago.
13 days ago?
Yeah, almost, week and a half.
Almost 2 weeks ago, okay. And you have 47 days left as I say this, and you're almost a fifth of the way there. Out of a $500,000 goal, which I've seen other Kickstarters sadly crash and burn on, you guys are almost up to 100K already.
We might hit 100K. Yeah.
That is fantastic. You're like within spitting distance of 100K. So if the momentum can keep going, can be kept up, there shouldn't be a problem with reaching 500K.
We're very optimistic based on what so far, and the fact that we haven't really, we still have some hidden stuff that we're going to reveal in the weeks to come.
Can you say what any of that is right now?
Well, our backers and the people who are kind of sitting on the fence, they want to see more gameplay trailers, gameplay videos, and that's what we're working on now, so that's going to come out quite soon.
Very nice. I know I want to see that. I'm very excited. You have my money anyway, because I really liked what I read.
Excellent. Thank you.
So I'll just start with the basics. How long have you guys been working on this game? Like, when did it start? What was the inspiration? That sort of thing.
Well, Ollie's been working on it much longer than me. He brought me in maybe 5 months ago.
Okay.
And, you know, the idea was at a different stage then, but it just kind of blossomed into, mostly this game blossomed to, why the hell hasn't someone made a game like this before? You know, aside from like the closest thing would be FTL.
Yeah.
But still just kind of the whole flying your ship experience. And so it just kind of started rolling and rolling and rolling off of the, well, why aren't people doing it this way? Why aren't people doing it that way? And then we put this concept together. We've really been working hard on, we're a methodical group, so we're really working hard on making sure that we get all the details right. And we've been doing that. We've been hitting the pavement hard doing that for the last at least 5 months that I've experienced, but longer for Oli.
Yeah, I actually have a background from Funcom, and I, after completing work on, first I worked on Age of Conan, and then I worked on Secret World, and after finishing up Secret World, I decided to join up with some former colleagues to start on this project. So, as Garrett mentions, I've been working on this for quite some time, and what's interesting as well is when we started out, we're going to go in a very different direction. We were thinking about taking, Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Ship ramming
Was it ship ramming? And I think I remember we were thinking about like dressing up the ships, like every time you go.
Yeah,
like,
but even before that, it was about, we were talking more about doing kind of the Roman Empire in space.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then we thought like, well, it's kind of been done something similar before.
Not very often, though. Not very
no,
often.
No, but you have some IPs that are kind of inspired by Rome.
Yeah.
So we thought, like, how could we come up with something that's a bit different? So we started looking into... One of the guys on the team started to mention that maybe we should look into Russia or China or something. So we went a bit in that direction, and then we started to look back in history, and then we came up with a suggestion that, hey, maybe we should go for Imperial Russia. And then it kind of went from there, basically.
Yeah, the Tsarist influence was pretty immediate, you know, whenever I watched the trailer that you guys put together for the game. And it looks like I don't remember if it was Catherine that was the queen of – she was like the empress of Russia at some
Catherine
point.
Catherine the Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's civilization.
Oh, okay. So it was kind of like I got that vibe where it's like the old emperor has died and the fringe worlds decided that this is the time to make a break for – you know, to break up the union. And it seems kind of like – if you have a large space empire like that, it almost demands a sort of like a fascist government, you know, something that's just a very strong fist of power to hold that whole thing together because you have such an incredible amount of distance and to try to unify so many worlds under one flag. And so they see their opportunity to fragment at that point. And, yeah. And I guess that's where the player comes in, right?
Yes, the player can play a pivotal role there. But what's also interesting is you've seen the backstory trailer, and basically the mandate is set 1500 years into the future. And one of the reasons that the mandate itself exists, you're totally correct, it's not like a democracy or anything, of course. But one of the key goals with the mandate is to basically safeguard humanity to avoid the mistakes that happened on Earth. Because at the start of the backstory, you'll see basically that Earth is a wasteland. It's been destroyed, you know.
Mm. So can you explain the mandate itself? Because it's referenced a lot in there, but there's no actual explanation that I caught of this is specifically what it is.
So the mandate is basically a construct it's not exactly an empire in that sense. It's a confederation, so to speak, of different factions that left Earth in their different colony ships. We haven't really revealed all the story yet. We've started on that process, but we're trickling it out piece by piece. Nice. Basically, the current empress or the soon-to-be empress in the game is she represents one of the factions that are represented in the mandate. So there's multiple factions that are inspired by different cultures in both current and future Earth, basically. And she represents the House of Romanov, which is basically the old Imperial Russian family. So,
the Romanovs, right.
Okay, yeah, the Romanovs.
So the empire isn't a monoculture then. It's a bunch of different like the different cultures as they were represented on Earth are projected into space and they stayed pure, I guess, rather than everybody just becoming a big mix of culture and a neutral.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you have different factions that are – there's quite a bit of depth to our story and lore and universe. And there's, of course, some political intrigue and different factions are maneuvering for positions and so forth. And the emperor or empress can't be everywhere every time, you know, and has to rely on other either diplomats or bureaucrats to run the empire.
And so where do you fall into this? Are you doing missions for these bureaucrats? Are you doing missions – for the Empress?
So the player's role is kind of interesting because you start out as a disgraced space captain.
Oh.
Who, for whatever reason, has been put in jail. And that's also the prologue that we launched today covers a bit of that aspect, that you kind of retrace your steps, like what did you do and what was the reason or catalyst for you ending up being court-martialed?
Ooh, the super fun thing we did with that was instead of just giving the players a handful of points to attribute to their character, we made the decisions that they make in their own backstory that they're building equal the points that get added to their character.
Nice. So it's kind of like instead of giving points, like remember I think it was Daggerfall where you took a test and it was like a multiple choice test with all these different situations and depending on how you answered the questions, it would determine what kind of character you were. Remember that?
Yeah, you had a template where and then you could override or modify it slightly or something. That's true. Yeah.
So it sounds something like that, which is a great thing because I kind of miss that, and
I don't mind.
Two of our inspirations from this for this prologue has been there's this old Microprose role playing game called Darklands, which you may have heard of. Darklands and also the Traveller RPG are two major inspirations for this this character creation or prologue that we're developing.
So if I'm remembering correctly, can't you die while you're making a character in the Traveller games?
Yes. That's true.
Is there a possibility here as well?
It's not in now, but we did get feedback from some of the backers that they really loved it, and they wondered if they would be able to die during character creation as well. I don't see a reason why not to put it in. We just need to, I guess, make it a bit obvious to the players so they don't go... they don't get completely...
Yeah, maybe if you're such a dumbass and you just make wrong moves along every turn you make, then maybe you should just die. Go to jail.
I have a question about death and characters and that in this game. And with science fiction, maybe you have a little bit of flexibility in that. But a lot of the things in the campaign that are talked about are how it's more of a role-playing game where you interact with the crew and you have a vested interest in the personalities of the crew and that. And this is kind of a multi-part question because have you played the Baldur's Gate games? Like Baldur's Gate 2. Okay, so whenever you pick certain party members to take with you, then their personalities interact regardless of the player, but those individual NPCs will interact with each other, which is sometimes kind of entertaining. So I'm wondering if that will be a factor in the game of who you pick to be your crew and who gets promoted and that will play out. The other thing that I wanted to ask in that is with crew death, because you were talking about how you could be in a space fight, take a torpedo, people get sucked out into space and they're dead. Is death for NPCs permanent?
So your first question, to return to that regarding interaction with companions and so forth, right? You mentioned Baldur's Gate as an example. What we're going to do with the crew is we're going to allow you to have both enlisted men or women, which is basically your grunts, your red shirts. And these can be promoted to become non-commissioned officers when they get enough experience. So the enlisted are the most numerous on your ships, and you'll assign them to work in engineering, control your weapons, navigate your ship, and control your sensors and so forth. And they will rank up and skill up as they work your ship. Then you have your NCOs, and they will augment your crew. So they will work together and help you be more efficient, and we're trying to kind of simulate a bit the chain of command here. In addition to that, you have your captain, of course, which is it's the character that you make during character creation. And your captain has command skills, which basically allows him or her to affect both NCOs and the crewmen in close proximity. And when you get the bigger ship as well, there will be a third intermediate step between the captain and the NCOs, which is the commissioned officer. So for a battleship, for example, you might have more, you might have commissioned officers in addition to NCOs. These guys will level up, they will have personality traits, and they will interact with you. They might have quests for you, for example.
You can get quests from your own crew.
Yeah, so those players. So instead of having there will be characters that will be across the board on all games, but there will also be characters that you grow, and then they'll end up becoming a character in your universe. So I like to use Fred from engineering. He's my engineering officer. He was my non-commissioned officer, and I put him through school and everything, and he eventually became my. My engineering officer, and he gave me a mission that he wants us to go find his daughter on a planet that they got cut off from when the jump kits were destroyed. So that's a mission with him. So does he, if you get into a space battle and a torpedo hits engineering and he gets sucked out into space, does he die? I think yes. I think he should die. And I think that's going to suck, right? But that's part of the risk that you're going into battle with, is I don't want him to die. It'll change whether or not you just fly into battle or if you try to negotiate with the enemy. It'll also change how you fight. If engineering is getting hit pretty hard, you might want to turn your ship.
Yeah, that's the thing I see in games like XCOM that brings a lot of success to them, is you become invested in your guys and you know they're going to die. Like, at some point, one of your prized characters is going to get killed, and it's probably not going to be, you know, a fair thing. So, you know, I could see that happening here, where it would carry some emotional impact, because, you know, it's the death of even a main character is not always like an elaborate thing. It can just be like, you know, bad things happen sometimes suddenly.
So wait, if Engineer Bob, if that was his name, if Engineer Bob dies and he had a mission to find his daughter, does that mission become, does it like disappear if he dies?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about having a couple like second and third chances, so that if Bob dies, then someone pops up in the crew that says, "Hey, I'm Bob's brother. I want to find his daughter. You know, I want to find his daughter too." But still, that kind of stuff is in, we're being trying to figure it out right now. But those ideas are in the works. I think there's definitely characters that. Well, Ole, you were talking about different difficulty levels and having some characters killable and some of them not killable.
Yeah, and again, let's jump back a bit in time. Do you guys remember Red Baron from Dynamics, for example?
Absolutely.
So then you will also remember how they did their difficulty. You had like preset templates to set the difficulty from, I think, 0 to 100%. So you had like easy, normal, hard, and realistic. But if you wanted as a player, you could change this, I think, during play. So as you became more familiar and more comfortable with the game, you could increase the difficulty. But you could also do a customized version where you actually turn... You could, for example, go for full realism but have unlimited ammo if you wanted to go for that.
Right,
for example.
Sure.
So we are discussing how exactly to do the difficulty, because we see that one backer, for example, he told us that, wow, your concept is great, but I don't really want to have NPC invasion fleets. I want to be able to like play in my own sandbox, you know? So maybe we will offer something similar to what you have in Master Orion or Civilization. You know that you have certain parameters you can turn on and off for your own sandbox.
That's not a bad idea. People do love those games.
No. Yeah, and similarly, for just to finish up on that, similarly for your crew, maybe when you start playing the game, we will be a bit more lenient, and at least maybe we'll kill off your red shirts, you know, but maybe your captain and your officers can be wounded but not killed. And then you can step up to a higher difficulty, which will give you more better in-game rewards and so forth, but then it's more lethal.
That's not a bad, bad balancing act. Now, I have a question continuing the thread of Engineer Bob. If... you do find his daughter. Does the daughter become a member of your crew? Does Engineer Bob gain skills? Does he become more efficient? And what happens if you do a mission that's based on one of your own crew members, for example? What happens if you complete it?
I'll let you handle that one, Gary, okay. Since you brought up Engineer Bob in the first place.
Yeah, I talked about... that was just kind of a mission I pulled out of my ass. Just off the top of my head, and I've used it as an example several times. But
yeah,
those are all great questions. If we got the daughter, I don't know why not we have her on the ship. Why not? You know, that's the way I see it. If we have the daughter,
why not?
She can be on the ship, or you can have the option. We can just put the option in there that, thanks for finding my daughter. I'd like to go live with her now, or whatever. You know, in retirement. Maybe you can retire the guy. I feel like there should be little options here and there.
No, that makes sense.
To do what you like with your crew, depending on how missions
turn out. Maybe you get disappointed, you know, when you show them both out the airlock. It's kind of a player choice.
Now the way we're talking about this, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're not really in a military. You're more of like a privateer. Of the the days of old. Is that the vibe I'm getting from? Is that the correct vibe? Oh, okay, very cool.
So basically, just to pick up on that, at the start of the game, you've just been released from prison. You were imprisoned and convicted by the Admiralty of the Grand Fleet, which is a faction in the game. At the start of the game, for reasons we will explore later, the Grand Fleet has been weakened, and it's been this kind of like pillar or... they've been basically protecting the Mandate for several hundred years. And whereas the rest of the Mandate or institutions has been gradually corrupted, they have basically held firm but they have been weakened now due to some unfortunate events. So they are no longer strong enough to stave off the rebellion. And so the newly crowned empress decides to release all these crazy captains from jail and outfit them with new ships. And she also confers on you this special scepter, which grants you, you know, like a letter of mark, I think, is or mark.
Yes, letter, yeah. Yes, I believe it was so, called letter of mark, yes.
Yeah, so you're not necessarily a member of the Grand Fleet anymore because you've been disgraced and kicked out. You might be able to work your way back in if you so choose, but the Empress and the Grand Fleet are two factions that are different, you know. The Grand Fleet is allied to the Empress, but you are basically a corsair of the Empress. So she doesn't really mind, you know, if you follow the code of the Grand Fleet or if you ignore it, as long as you kind of work towards her goals, she's a bit more pragmatic.
Hmm.
And just touching on those codes as well, they're called the Articles of War. And this is actually, we decided to be inspired by a historical document there, which is actually the British Royal Navy.
Yeah.
They had something called the Articles of War, which is a very strict code that regulated their behavior.
Right.
And we took that historical document and we have updated it for our game.
Ooh.
So both from a role-playing perspective and also for certain in-game events, you as a captain can either respond to certain events according to the Articles of War or ignore them, for example.
Oh.
But you yourself, because you received this Imperial Scepter, you are exempt from the Articles of War, but your officers and enlisted are not, you know? So it's like, how do you react to this?
Oh. See, I'm a big fan of like Horatio Hornblower,
yeah,
and all that stuff. So I'm well aware of the Articles of War. I love it.
I want to bring something up so we get it in the show notes because I found this. A friend of mine told me about this, and I found it particularly entertaining. It's a battle called the War of Jenkins's Ear. What? I'll give you a link to it on where they talk about it on Wikipedia. But it was basically there's a conflict between, I think it was Britain and Spain, and they had other things that they wanted to fight about, but they remembered this old grievance where somebody cut off this guy's ear, and then they declared war on it like 5 years later.
What?
Yeah, it was Great Britain and Spain. It was a war that lasted from 1739 to 1748.
What?
And it was an ear severed from Robert Jenkins, who was captain of a British merchant ship. And the severed ear was subsequently exhibited before Parliament. And, you know, they were like, those damn Spaniards, and they used that as an excuse to go to war with Spain.
As a just cause of war, basically? Okay.
Yeah.
I want to believe there's more to the story than just the ear. I think the ear might have been the
Oh, there is, the yeah. It was the excuse. Was what it was, but it was just that thing you guys were talking about, Articles of War, and it's like, oh yeah, Europe used to do some pretty goofy things surrounding why they would fight each other.
Sure,
that's awesome. So okay, now I got to admit, I'm a huge fan of missions in games like this. Now in games like this, usually you like go to the mission computer and you get a mission and you do the mission. Then you go to the mission computer, do it again. But we've already talked about getting missions from your crew, which is pretty unique. How else can you get missions and what kind of missions will be available to you?
So there's going to be factions in the game that you will be able to interact with, and either you can ally with them or you become hostile or try to set up trade agreements and so forth. So you could do missions for them. You might receive missions from the Grand Fleet or indirectly, probably, from the Empress herself. Beyond that, you know, it's a sandbox game. Have you played Mountain Blade?
A little bit. Yeah, I think I played the beta and then got distracted by shiny things. And
okay. Pirates, then. Sid Meier Pirates.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so think about how that works, where you're basically traveling around, you're raiding convoys, you're taking over settlements and so forth, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
So think about transposing that into a space where you actually capture star bases and so forth.
I just got to chill. I just got all tingly.
So does the majority of the interaction between characters happen on the ship, or will it randomly generate a planet environment that you would go down to?
Okay, so planets.
I was going to ask about that.
That's going to be too expensive for us to do with the budget we want, or we're asking for. But the more we make with the Kickstarter, of course, the more content we can put on there. I'd love to do away missions, just like get in a shuttle and go down to the surface with the with your squadron.
Make it the same isometric style thing you're doing for the shipboarding and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, we would apply the exact same controls for that too.
Well, you were saying that you can build your own star bases. Can you get out and walk around in those once they're completed?
I think that would be another stretch goal.
Okay.
We want to focus on making the inside of your ship playable, and of course, boarding other ships. We want the insides of ships playable.
But the ship is your home, so that makes sense. You want to focus on that.
But it would be so awesome if we had the budget to be able to go inside a certain portion of your space station and walk around and talk to the scientists in your science bay, or talk to the officers training at the war academy and all that. That would be tons of fun. It would equal more.
And we're inspired by Battlestar Galactica. We're inspired by Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, for example. Quark's in Deep Space Nine.
Go
to the barkeep and figure out what shady the business he's up to.
Oh, it's my girlfriend's favorite character. Surprise. Now, getting back to Sid Meier's Pirates, for example, will there be a dancing minigame?
Right. Yeah, there should be.
Yes.
No, I don't know. That might be a stretch call. That might be a stretch.
Oh. I'm upping my bet pledge again. I just upped it today. I'm going to do it again if there's a dancing mini game.
Yeah, so the universe kind of gives me...
Now, we did mention boarding.
We'll make sure that the keys...
I think we're all just talking over each other. What was that?
Yeah.
Who was saying what?
Oh, I was going to say the universe kind of gives me a vibe that reminds me of Emperor of the Fading Suns a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking that, too.
So it's I'm wondering, like... Is this one of those scenarios where the future is old? It's like they've been 1,500 years and they're not really inventing new technology. It's like we invented Stargates and we kind of plateaued, and now we just kind of skirmish amongst ourselves. Yeah, well, now that the emperor has died, the empire has fragmented, and is there an immediate like regression in technology level? Or have the fringe worlds always kind of been kept lower technology because they are fringe, and maybe that's why they're mad?
I think that I should probably answer this because a lot of it's with the art direction. The technology becomes a classist question. Who gets the technology, who doesn't? Those'd be the people who have a lower technology. Of course, the rebels, they're not going to have the latest greatest. And then you've got the Europans or. The Europans that have very high technology and they like to show it off. They're the science-based faction. But then the Mandate or the Romanov faction. I think that I like to think about true like really high technology is indistinguishable between magic, and technology. So it's almost like you can't see the technology, and it's kind of. In their, it's sewed into their uniform. For example, the Empress, I did a promo image of her looking into the galaxy, and that's just a hologram that's projected by all sorts of bits, sewn into her dress. Mm. So,
but for them, the technology is to the point where they don't think about the technology anymore.
Yeah.
It's not like, look at this cool thing. It's just normal.
Right. Totally.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's totally. But all the lower class, they don't get access to that same technology. So to them, it's like the premier stuff.
So are they kind of resentful with that? Because like if you look at the new movie Elysium that's out, where it's like you have the haves and the have nots, right? And the bourgeois that have this. Crazy technology, and they just cure cancer at a whim, and everybody else is a dirt farmer that's left to suffer and fight over scraps. So is it kind of that have and have not, and is that what the political tension is about?
Sure. I think more than that, but our writer is really good at exploiting those types of things, and I think that we naturally kind of just started setting up the universe anyway in that regard to make it clear why different factions kind of dislike each other. Mm. And we're inspired by the assholes that live on Earth right now, and in the 1800s. You know, that's that, you know, we're humanity and we have a lot of technology in the future, but we kind of really haven't changed. You know, we're out there being dicks in space as well.
Yeah,
but
social dynamics remain the same.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that all reminds me of Firefly, not just the social dynamics remain the same, but then you have the, then you have the border worlds. They're living on, ranches with horses and they don't, and they have six shooters. Yeah, and you have the inner worlds, you know, that have all the fancy stuff. So that what you're saying reminds me a lot of that in a good way.
Yeah, Firefly is great. I love Firefly.
Yay.
Yeah, both Firefly and Battlestar Galactica have been inspiration for us in terms of, you know, the crew dynamic and making sure the crew has a central role in the game.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with either of those in terms of crew dynamic.
So the crews that you're going to have, are they generally from the same faction? Or since you have a military crew that might be assembled from, you know, people from all different factions join the Imperial Navy, right? So you might have people from factions that don't like each other that are crew on the same ship, perhaps?
Yep, and that could create tension on the ship, you know, where you as a captain needs to either you airlock everybody or you just airlock some people or you don't airlock them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want there to be missions on the ship, you know, the missions start to finish, starts on the ship, ends on the ship, you know, and also missions, of course, outside of the ship that you use your ship to complete. But just like all the shows we love, it would be cool if we can resolve a conflict on the ship because we have a big crew of different people. That should be a great source for us to add more drama and more content.
Oh, okay.
And in addition to that, you might have guest stars, basically. You might have like a visiting dignitary that you're transporting, or maybe you've captured somebody that you need to ferry somewhere. Maybe you can go to the brig and talk to them, you know? So that could open up some opportunities as well.
Oh, that's awesome, because, you know, that's one thing I miss. Like, Star Trek games, they never do stuff like that.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah, like, that's what the show was about. But the games are like, nope, it's all going to be about war and none of the other fun stuff that they actually do.
you guys said in one part in the Kickstarter that you don't want it to be about, you know, diplomacy isn't about going in and picking an option on a dialogue tree, right? So you want it to be your actions that change things. But what kind of actions other than, you know, shields up, arm phasers, what can you do?
What you do throughout the galaxy is going to affect your reputation. So that's we're gonna have a reputation system. Everyone knows what that is. But you know, I think that when you warp into a system and you get encountered by a ship, we want there to be the ability to talk to that ship first before you just start firing at them. If your reputation is so bad with that faction, I'm sure that shields up, start shooting, you know, start preparing the missiles. But if you have a, you know, slightly bad reputation with them, but you could probably get away without getting into a fight or come to some agreement that would be better for the both of you, that should be part of the game. You know, they did in Star Trek. That's what they did in Battlestar Galactica. You know, it wasn't always flying and shoot. There was a story there. It's not just about fighting and blowing up the other ship first.
Well, that's exciting because that's what we love. That's what we want in those games. I mean, it's easier to do combat than it is to do diplomatic stuff, probably. But come on, that's what they show us all the time.
Yeah. Right. You know? Do you want to compartmentalize the game almost episodically where it's like you fly into this sector and here's this situation and we're going to resolve this situation? Or is it like, oh yeah, I see you guys are in the middle of a conflict and I could step in and solve that. Well, I'm going to go take care of this other laundry list of 10 other quests I've got and I'll come back and pick this up. So is it a thing where once you open the door, it's like you're in that episode and resolve it? Or can you get like a huge quest list? And because that's where I'm at, like in Skyrim. I was playing Skyrim last night. I have so many quests that I've picked up because I've been so many places and talked to so many people that I'm lost. It's just what should I do?
I did the same thing with Skyrim. I just had like 20 things to do.
Right.
And you can't drop them. You can't say, I don't want to do this quest.
Yeah. Right.
Get rid of it. It's stuck there forever.
And since there's a lot of MMO experience on the team, that quest list, I think, is something that everybody's intimately familiar with, right? So,
you want to answer that, Ollie?
Well, first of all, I think that some of the interaction you'll be doing is not going to necessarily be straight out quests. Gareth mentioned factions, for example. You know, you might be approaching a certain faction to work for them and do a lot of menial tasks, which will increase your faction with that faction over time.
Right.
Or increase your reputation with that faction over time, I guess it's better to say, which will unlock new options with them, you know, either trade agreements, alliances, and so forth. Maybe you'll be able to purchase some of the good stuff that they will be selling.
Right.
Beyond that, we want the universe to be reactive. It's not going to be static. So things will happen. And you mentioned the example about, you know, coming in, there's a hotspot, there's a conflict there. If you don't respond to that there and then, they might resolve it themselves, you know. And you might get a news update that basically faction blah-de-blah has...
Oh, very cool. So, yeah. Like, stuff just won't wait for you to come by and finish it. Stuff will actually be moving forward in time.
So, yeah. So it sounds almost like the AI could be playing a game of, like, Europa Universalis in the background of these different factions and kingdoms talking with each other and doing diplomacy and conflicts. And then you just happen to stumble into it while it's going on. And can influence it, but you're not necessarily the decider. You can influence.
Yeah, you are basically the representative of the Empress there. So you are you come in there to kind of like reaffirm or reestablish mandate rule. How you go about it, whether you actually do that, or if you instead decide to become a space pirate, or you decide to ally with another faction, you know, that's kind of up to you. So it's going to be a sandbox. It's going to be up to you to decide in what direction you want to take the game.
Okay.
Yeah, our main focus is to develop kind of the base of the game so that we can build all these fun little stories into it pretty easily.
Now, the base of the game is the starship stuff, which I want to ask about. Now, you mentioned reputation. Is that the currency system by which you improve your ship and improve your crew? For example, is that like experience? Because like if I'm recalling, was Starfleet Command, where to improve your ship or to get another ship, you'd have your currency was basically your reputation in number form. So is something like that going on here?
No. The approach we're taking is basically that at the start of the game, most of the ground fleet has been lost. Some of these ships are quite ancient, you know, and they might not be able to very quickly reproduce these big ships. So for you as a player to actually be able to obtain some of the bigger ships, you may need to upgrade your, you know, like your home base to be able to actually have your own shipyard.
And
you guys mentioned XCOM before, and we're inspired by XCOM when it comes to the boarding combat, even though we're going to do it in real time. But we're also inspired by XCOM when it comes to your base and your research and manufacturing.
Oh, very cool.
So you'll be upgrading your ships, you'll be building bigger ships, you'll be, you know, taking prize ships and salvaging them for metals, and then you will use that to fuel your war effort and build bigger ships and better weapons for your troops and to equip your ships.
And also, we're asteroids and mining for setting up resource networks and stuff like that with, you know, finding resources out in space to build more parts, you know, to
ferry back to your main base, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, so basically when you board a ship, you can take it and then you can only melt it down for scrap at your starf base, or can you keep it and add it to your fleet, or how does that work?
I think you would need an upgrade to be able to back engineer it. Otherwise, you can melt it down for parts. But a ship intact is way more worth way more than a ship in pieces.
Mm.
So it would... if you get into a fight, I mean, that's another factor. You probably want to capture the ship rather than just blow it to bits.
Right.
So but if you go ahead.
If you capture a ship, much like Sidmere's Pirates, right? I fought this ship. I took it. Do I have to, like, give a portion of my crew to go over there and be the prize crew to steer that thing home? Or how does that work? And then once I get that ship, now do I have a fleet of two ships? And then I can continue to grow a bigger and bigger fleet, or will I always just be my single command ship?
No, there will be a progression there, and you're quite right that if you capture this ship, we haven't really figured out how much crew you need to operate the ship, but even in Sid Meier's Pirates, you know, you could have a very skeleton crew just to kind of travel with a ship, but you wouldn't be able to use it in battle very efficiently.
Right.
So... you'll be able to take over that ship and bring it back to your base and, as Garrett mentioned, maybe break it down or refit it or something so you can actually use it in your fleet. And we actually want a bit of progression here, where at the start of the game, you control the small frigate. As your captain officer ranks up, you'll eventually control what we call a flotilla, which might be like your main ship and two NPC-controlled escort ships. So that might be either captains that you've rescued, you know, like lost Grand Fleet guys, or maybe you've recruited a mercenary captain or somebody else. Or maybe Bob from engineering finally got his chevrons or whatever, so now he's a captain. And he will be able to fly around with you, and you can kind of give him orders. Eventually, as a player, you'll be promoted to what we call flag officer rank. So that's kind of like Commodore Rear Admiral.
Right.
And then you'll be able to equip a flagship and control your own battle squadron, as we call it, like six ships or something.
Very nice.
So then that's going to shift your focus a bit. You'll still be able to control your own ship and, you know, micromanage it. Or you could take one of your most experienced captains and assign them as your first officer and kind of delegate the day-to-day business of the ship.
So this is going to be kind of lead to my next question, because when you mentioned ship control, and I want to get back to the increasing in rank in a minute, but when you mentioned ship control, on the Kickstarter, you mentioned three completely different games that control in three very different ways.
Yep.
And so are all those options available to you? Like, can you control the ship yourself with a mouse? Can you assign your first officer to control, and then you give him orders, and then you watch him carry out your orders and stuff like that? I mean, how's that going to work?
We're going to definitely have one control scheme that we're inspired by those other games. But we're going to pick one that suits the game the best.
Okay.
But one thing that's important here for these games is when we mention these games, we're not mentioning them necessarily from a control perspective.
Okay.
We're mentioning them also from some of the elements that they bring to the table. Like, I think we mentioned Klingon Academy, for example.
Yeah.
Which gave the feeling of you being on board a ship and being the captain. Right. They have the very nice damage modeling. So when you were blowing away the ship, you could kind of see the damage. It was very visceral. So that's one of the elements you want to take from Klingon Academy, for example.
You know, it's another element that you should take from Klingon Academy? The command system. Remember the numerical command system?
Yeah, the voiceover command system.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was funny that Bridge Commander, which came out later, did it worse, I think, than Klingon Academy. At least that's what I think.
Well, the another thing is, I can't think of any other games that took on a damage system that had dynamic damage to the ship. Why aren't we doing this? You know, like, if you get shot in space, there should be damage to your hull. There should be right where you got hit.
Well, my guess is that either developers didn't want to put in the time to do that, or computers haven't been power enough to model that successfully.
I don't know.
Those are my guesses.
I felt like we did it pretty easily. We got it done pretty easily in our demo. You can do it. And it didn't take us years and years. I don't know. I feel, you know what? I feel like this genre has been ignored.
It has. It totally has for years. I mean, the Free Space 2 was pretty much the shot in the head. And that's what killed it for a while. And it has been ignored. But thank God it's kind of coming back. You know, it's kind of awesome. I mean, have you seen that other Kickstarter? It's kind of similar to yours. It's called Pulsar Lost Colony.
Yeah.
So that.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing something different with their overall universe and the direction of their game, but it's the co-op ship control thing is kind of similar, but they're doing it more in a simi way while you're doing it more in a kind of an RTS way, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
There's room for both. I'm not saying there ain't room for both. I'm just... It's kind of awesome, totally. I think, that both of these are happening.
It's an emerging idea. I want to say it's an emerging idea, but it's also... It's not a new idea.
No.
You know, it's just an idea that nobody did. You know, we love the shows, but nobody said, hey, let's make a game that's like the show, you know, for whatever reasons. But, you know, so here we are. You put gamers in a room and say, hey, what do I want to play? That stuff happens. These ideas come up.
Now, you're talking about dynamic damage modeling on your ships. Now, are you talking about, like, being able to shoot down a turret? Are you talking about being able to shoot at a particular type of ship and weaken that particular section of ship's armor?
Have you played with the ship designer?
I know. I haven't had time.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay. You got a ship. Okay. Well, think of it, like a soda can.
Right.
You shoot a soda can.
Right.
Then there's a hole where you shot the soda can.
Ah. Right?
And soda comes out.
True.
But with our ship, it's, you know, gases and crewmen come out. But, you know, we're not going to make it so easy to lose crew that way. But yeah, if you play with the ship designer, you get our prototype for the ship ship destruction. We definitely want it to look much better than the way we have it, but it's pretty much right there for you. You can, wherever you shoot hard, you can destroy a portion of the hull, and you can see the innards of the ship, and you'll even, if you hit it in the right spot, you'll even see some people fly out.
Where is the ship designer, by the way?
Maybe I'll grab a link for you so you don't have to dig around for it.
It's actually, now we've updated our link, so it's actually featured quite well on the front page of the Kickstarter at the
top. Oh, okay. I was looking at the updates. I thought it might
okay. be in there. Yeah, if you refresh it, we updated it an hour ago. So it says, click here for the ship designer and prologue. But just to follow up on what Garrett was mentioning as well, in terms of
I see it. Okay.
what you can do when you hit an enemy ship, say, for example, that you want to board a particular ship, and you want to weaken the defenders, you know? So you might scan the enemy ship, figure out where the life support systems are and maybe the artificial gravity, knock those out, and then send in your marines with mag boots, for example, you know? So the guys that are defending could have a bit of trouble defending if they're not equipped for this, whereas you would have a tactical advantage when you're attacking.
Oh,
so we're trying to tie the ship combat and the boarding combat quite closely together as well, so there is some kind of interaction there.
Now, oh, very nice.
Is there a sort of morale/loyalty system with the crew where, say, if you give orders, the crew will always do them, or if your performance hasn't been so stellar, then they might question what you ask them to do, especially if it involves going to die?
Yeah, I think this affects, I guess, more when you are inside the ship when there's boarding combat or stuff going on, you know. Say that there's you're being boarded, your ship is being boarded, you know, and you have this guy, it's Bob from engineering again, and his friends around him have been shot down, you know.
Poor Bob.
He might fail his morale check and run away, you know. What do you do with him if you survive, you know? Basically, he hasn't stood his ground. He's in violation of articles of war. Do you court-martial him or throw him out the airlock? Or what do, you know?
The Russian answer is you shoot him in the head and the morale of everybody that sees it goes up by 5 points.
And you know what? You might actually have a crew that you've been shaping to actually respond well to that kind of behavior, you know? Maybe you become a famous pirate captain and that's the way you kind of keep discipline.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think that we should definitely have different mechanics for different whatever faction you decide to ally yourself with. But yeah, totally.
It's kind of like the Klingons. Now, are there going to be aliens in this game, or is everyone a human?
And just... Shh.
Okay.
Shh.
Okay. Okay. All right. I will go back to a question I wanted to ask earlier about your captain. Now, your captain gains in levels. How does that whole role-playing aspect of that work out? Like, how do you gain experience? How do you gain levels? Do you put it into certain points once you gain a level? Blah, blah, blah.
Well, I know that there's going to be stuff that you get from doing missions, but part of that is going to be experience. And, of course, all the things that you do, it's an RPG.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, whether we're going to have a mostly like unused increase of skills, or you get XP like talent points you can invest when you level up, we'll see. If we might do like a combination there, you know, to give the both a bit of player control and based on the experiences. What we were thinking of doing for the enlisted men, you know, your red shirts, is at least they will accumulate skills based on what they're doing. So if you're, again, Bob from engineering, if he only works in engineering, he will probably acquire mostly engineering related skills.
Oh, okay.
Then if you shift him over to work on weapons, initially he'll be a klutz, you know, but eventually he might actually gain some skill operating weapons.
Oh, okay. Oh, this ship design thing is pretty cool, actually. I'm playing with it right now. This is pretty nifty.
We want it to be cooler, but this is the, you know, prototype. We want to just show
people. It's very pretty. I like the lighting you have going on here. I can't see where the sun is. But there's a definite light source somewhere over there.
Sun is going to be DLC.
Damn it! Everything's DLC now. Okay, asteroids. Okay.
Have you got to shoot at it yet?
I think I'm shooting at them now. I'm shooting the asteroids at the I see what's happening.
Hey, okay. So we were talking a little bit about the tech level before, and if you could kind of elaborate on, like, humanity, we made Stargates, right? But do we have teleporters? Or, you know, is combat with lasers, or do we still, like, throw mass at each other, or what?
The frame of the ship and see the girders inside.
Oh, really? Awesome.
This is really cool.
I hope you had insurance.
This is really nifty. Sorry.
I hope when the little crewmen fly out into space, they
all flying out. They're totally flying out right now. They're these little guys just flying out.
Couldn't scream, right? Because...
They're all flying out there. Oh, no.
Do they look like
Sandra? That's Bob.
Do they look like Sandra Bullock?
Bob just flew out. Bob just flew out. Oh, poor Bob. I just killed Bob. Okay, apparently I can fix the shield, but... I can't fix the hull. Oh, the hull I can fix.
There is a repair icon there as well.
Yeah, I'm doing that, but it's really slow on the hull. Let's reload. Oh, I see. You have to reload the...
Yeah, it takes time to repair.
Yeah, you have to reload the wrench. I see. Oh, and I like how the hull looks all patched and stuff. So it looks like it's been in a battle.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, as well, that we want to try to do with these ships. Like, if you've taken them through an asteroid field and it's been bumped up or you've been to battle, it should look like it's been in battle, you know?
I like that.
It's like playing GTA and crashing your car, you know? It's going to look quite banged up.
I'm hurling a bunch of asteroids at this thing. And, it hurts. It stings. Ow! Oh, that's really cool. I'm sorry. I hope you don't mind me playing this right now.
No, it's great.
Those guys are flying out. I need to fix it.
Did you try the laser?
Yeah, the laser just melts the hull, which is like, wow. Okay, let's melt the bridge. Let's melt this bridge thing here. Ooh, melt it. Melt it down. Melt it. Kill it. Ooh, that looks really terrible.
So the ships are actually made of chocolate.
Yes.
Oh, no, wait, that's galactose. Never mind.
No, they're actually made of Reese's peanut butter pumpkins. Oh, no, so many people flying out. Oh, that must have been 100 guys right there. Oh, I am so mean. I am such a bastard. I am a total ass.
So, Jim, you were asking a question.
Sorry, Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the tech level of the different parts of the Empire, right? People that you're going to run into. Do we have, like, teleportation technology, or people still take shuttles down to the planet and things like that?
I don't think we do that.
No?
I don't think we have teleportation.
No, we're going to skip teleportation, I think. We don't think it necessarily fits with kind of more, what should we call it, Garrett, like more hard science fiction or...
Yeah.
Okay, and then also... Well, like Brian was saying about, well, he's shooting lasers at stuff. So I guess that kind of answers that question, because I've often wondered in science fiction whether space combat would actually be about shooting beams of light at each other, or would we just stick with the tried and true big steel balls, you know, because if you hit somebody with a mass, then that's going to do a lot of damage, or a missile, right, which is basically a smart bullet.
This is just the concept right now, and the laser is kind of the last minute addition. Aesthetically, I think that lasers look bad in space battles. I did have a concept to include lasers without it being that big bright beam across the screen. But that's for me to sort out when we get to the hard work. But I agree with you. I think that for this universe, we're going to mostly rely on the big kind of heavy cannons and explosives and technology on projectile weapons. And the lasers will probably be primarily for knocking down shields and stuff, kind of to help you get your ordnance inside the shields.
Yeah, more surgical attacks, kind of, you know, like subsystem targeting or...
Oh, yeah. I really like how the shield looks. It looks like you're punching through glass.
Sweet. That's what we were going for.
I really like that. This is very cool. I feel bad I haven't tried this until now, but this is very cool.
Well, when you get some time, you got to try that character creator because we spent a lot of time on that too.
I'm gonna try that right now while we're talking.
Yeah, you mentioned Darklands, right?
Oh God, love Darklands. Played the hell out of that back in the day. Wait, where's that character creator? Anyway,
I put it in the comments.
Yeah, I gotta find. There's like 18,000 windows here.
So how much electronic warfare goes on with the ship?
Ooh, good question.
Because a lot of true space battle would be about not being seen and not being hit if you are seen, right? So you would think if you put the shields up, if the shields are a technology that is energy absorption, then how do you detect me? Because I've got my shields up, you can't bounce radar off of me. I'll just look like a black spot, right? Because nothing can detect me because I don't reflect any emissions.
So what we're aiming for here as well is that potentially at the start of an engagement or the start of a battle, you might start outside visual range, you know, which would then play a bit similar to, I think Homeworld had this, you know, like when you detected something very far away, you couldn't really see exactly what it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one interesting concept we're playing around with is EMS, like electromagnetic signature, or is it electromagnetic? EMS?
Yeah.
Where basically you can try to mask your EMS or rig for silent running, I guess, would be the equivalent in like a submarine simulator. So you could try to like sneak up on somebody, hide behind asteroids, power down your systems to like try to remain undetected, and you might even use a cloaking device to aid you in that endeavor. And certain ships, especially smaller ships, might have a lower baseline EMS than the big ships.
Oh. Yeah, and so also, this is going to, tactically, if you come from the direction of the sun, if you have the sun at your back, they would have a hard time seeing you because you would have all that emission behind you. So you wouldn't even show up, you know, because you have so much background noise.
Yeah, you'd be blended by. Yeah, that's true. Right. And you might even be able to launch some kind of decoys, you know, to obfuscate or confuse.
Well, that would be a tactic you adopt based on what environment you're in. So if you're if you're in an asteroid belt, if you're in a nebula, we even had like an idea for a pulsar where there's a pulsar swinging around. You have like a limited time that you can be in an area. If the pulsar beam swings around and burns you up, you know, you have to adjust your tactics based on that.
Because I used to play a lot of submarine sims, and you know, there's so much depth. Because you would think like, well, it's a boat and they shoot torpedoes at each other, but the majority of the game of submarines is detection and and trying to figure out exactly where your target is because they don't get a clear sight to them. It's just through sounds, right? So it's like, well, we know there's a guy here somewhere, but we have to spend like hours maneuvering around and taking different samples to try to locate this guy. And then the environment itself, you know, if you're above or below a thermal layer and just all that subtlety that goes into that. And I've often kind of wondered if anybody was going to explore a game in space with that kind of detail. And I don't know if this is the game that should go after that or not, but because it seems, you know, your focus is in more of an RPG kind of thing. You're not trying to be a space submarine sim.
Yeah, we definitely want to focus. We're gonna focus on the stuff that we can get right first, and then the details can come after that.
Hmm.
But Oli, you're going to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to add that we might have this as like an element at the start of an engagement. You know, before you know exactly what you're up against. That might depend on the difficulty setting, but one thing that's really interesting is, you know, if you don't have perfect intelligence, it could dictate how you handle a situation when you're approaching another ship. In terms of weapons, if you had that ship designer still open, you would have seen possibly that we have what we call light weapons or turret weapons. Those are in turret mounts, either above or below the ship. But in addition to that, we have what we call heavy weapons. And in the current build of the ship designer, you can't activate them, but they are mounted on the side. And those are your like rockets, your space bombs, your torpedoes, and your missiles. And some of these can actually be used from quite far away. So you could use them from outside visual range, you know, but you might need a ship that has a very good radar or something equivalent like sensor array to be able to actually use them from far away.
Oh, I just went through the character creator. This is pretty cool. There are all these different traits. I got a Europa dude, Boris Babinet or whatever. He's not a happy-looking fella. He's got this this hood thing.
He's busy with his cube, man.
Busy with his little cube, the thing from the Avengers cube,
the Tesseract.
Tesseract, yes. He's staring at the Tesseract, and he's looking into Loki's eyes or something, because Loki is so pretty. And that was pretty cool, because you did all these little choices, and then you could choose how you got thrown to jail, which is pretty cool, I thought.
And you have at the bottom, you can see the articles of war and a bit of lore, and you can see your dossier get updated as you go through the different steps.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Oh, this is pretty cool. Okay, I don't want to restart. But yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a nice little taste of what's in the game. Yeah, you should allow your captains to die if they do a bunch of stupid stuff. I'm serious. I played this game from 1978 called Space. That's what it was called. And it was modeled after Traveler. And in character creation, which could take up to 45 minutes to an hour, you could die. And it was like, what? But it was kind of awesome. It was kind of funny at the same time.
It would be hilarious if you actually had a mutiny on the ship and the first officer shoots you and then you have to play the rest of the game as the first officer.
That would be funny, yeah.
Oh, that would...
it is a good opportunity to set a precedent for the game because, you know, people, you don't quite know how serious your decisions are until bad happens.
If the crew's morale gets shitty enough, look out.
Now, I don't think I've heard any mention of any kind of fighter craft yet. Fighters or shuttles.
Fighters would be, they would be on par with your weapons. You wouldn't be able to fly them, but if you had... a hangar bay. Mm. You would be able to have fighters. You would need a hangar bay in order to support your boarding craft.
Right.
And they were the only difference is they require crew members.
Sure.
And they would be another branch of your military officers. And they would also they're a weapon that can return back to the ship and you can use again.
Right. Now would you have to replace that with like another weapon with that? Like would you have to take out some turrets to have a fighter bay?
No, there would be – so with the ship designer, I know you were kind of under time constraint and you didn't get to completely play with it. But when you go back and play with it, the concept will be that each section of the ship – we've split this particular one into three – will have its own functionality. And when you want certain functionality, you'll be able to switch it out and allow that. So,
oh, okay.
For example, this
I did
this
get ship. That. Yeah, there were three different like turret sections for the middle, and one was like assault, and one was like support. Yeah, so I did get to play with that a little bit.
Well, you'll be able to switch out the entire block of the ship to replace it with something that has more weapons on it, but it'll be slower, or to replace it with something that has hangers on it, but it'll have less weapons. You know what I'm saying? You can replace the front of the ship with something that doesn't ram, but it has better speed and maneuverability, or it has extra weapon slots on it.
Or it has a lower EMS rating.
Yeah.
Hey, something that we haven't asked yet.
And the rear of the ship.
Jim, go ahead.
Okay. Something that we haven't asked yet, and maybe it came up and I missed it, but whenever you're trying to deal with the space combat and you have combat going on inside the ship or, you know, there's a multitude of things going on, is the game real-time or is it turn-based or is it some sort of strange mix of the two?
It's real-time.
Okay. So how are you going to handle that? Like if I have boarding going on in the ship while I'm in combat, am I like tabbing in and out between the external view and managing my dudes in the ship? And do I get status reports like up the side of the screen that tell me everything that's going on? Because I can't be everywhere at once.
Now, the ultimate goal, when you're boarding a ship or when an AI is boarding you, they're doing that because they want your ship. So there'll be a battle going on the outside. Let's just say it's you versus another ship. They'll most likely stop shooting at you because they want their boarding party to do the rest of the work. So that'll give you an opportunity to go inside and manage warding off the borders, and vice versa. Like if you board an enemy ship, you're probably going to stop firing at them because you could accidentally kill your own crew in the process. So there's that, but also when you include more ships, it becomes more dynamic. If you have a friend with you, you probably want to split up the tasks. Who can concentrate on warding off enemy ships while you're dealing with your boarding party?
Oh yeah, because you guys were talking about it was going to have co-op elements in there as well. And I didn't know if that was co-op in the same ship or co-op as we're a bunch of different ships on the same mission.
Bunch of different captains. Yeah, right. Bunch of different ships. Totally. But yeah, just playing by yourself, you know, you'll have to juggle it. It'll be a challenge to juggle it. But we're going to definitely concentrate on making that the transition between the inside and the outside of your ship easy to manage, because we definitely don't want the interface to get in your way. We want it to be able to help you use the game better.
You should just have a zoom in, zoom out thing. You zoom in and have to go inside.
That's what we want
to
do. Totally.
Yeah. And we've also discussed potentially having some kind of, you know, picture-in-picture thing where you might, if you're in space, you might get like a picture-in-picture showing like an action cam or director's cut to what's going on inside. And if you see that all your Marines are getting killed, you know, you can switch quickly to actually try to help them.
And that's another thing that'll help you, that will be important for you to try and upgrade later on. You'll definitely want to upgrade your Marines so that they can handle boarding parties, so that you don't have to, you know, constantly switch back and forth. If you like it, then keep doing it. But it's another thing that you'll want to upgrade to make play, make you more effective in combat.
Yeah. I've seen that successfully handled where you get status updates in games, like even in an RTS, right, where it'll be like, hey, we're under attack. And if you hit the space bar, it takes you to the scene of wherever the last notification came from.
Mm.
Totally. So can you pause and give orders, or are you locked into real time?
We are discussing having the ability to pause the game in single player. In co-op, we are not sure if that's a good idea.
Yeah, understandable.
Now, when you mention co-op, I have a question about something you mentioned on your Kickstarter. It says, if you or your friends are in trouble, instantly jump to the location from outside the game using Steam. How does that work?
Go for it, Ollie. You answered that. I liked what you put.
Do you want the in-game lore reason for it, or is it the technical reason you're looking for, or the technical explanation, or what?
I'm not sure I understand the question. He strokes his chin.
I kind of want the technical explanation.
You want the technical explanation? Okay, so of course we're going to have a network engine or middleware to handle all this. But think about it as, even though you're playing in a single player, it's kind of like you have a hidden lobby going on, you know? And if you go on your Steam friend list, you know, and you want help from somebody, you could invite them to join your game. And if they accept, the game launches and they get thrown into your game. It's a bit like one example of a co-op game that does this quite well is Dungeon Defenders.
Oh, I've not. No, I usually hate other people, so I usually don't play.
I've met people. They're a bunch of bastards.
Yes.
But it's important to underline as well that you can completely skip co-op, because it's a complete single player experience, you know. But you could play the co-op if you want with a friend, more like a campaign setting, you know, either in his sandbox or your sandbox.
Oh, nice.
Moving around together and then going to battle. Or you could just invite a friend when you are in a really, really tough spot. You know, you ended up going up against some big AI battle squadron, or like a notorious pirate that has hunted you down, you know, and it's like, oh my God, this is going, yeah. So you might be able to call in your friends, you know, they'll warp in and they'll rescue you.
So if I'm playing the game and I'm not doing, I need some help, and I see Jim is playing the game, I could send an SOS to Jim. And he could warp right to me.
He warps in and can help you. If he wants to. Maybe he'll just sit and laugh, you know, and wait for you to get...
That's probably what he'll do.
Yeah.
Well, also, I'm with you guys. Like,
sorry, go ahead.
I enjoy multiplayer, but I like playing single-player games. But the idea of having going through this universe, and let's just say you come across a big pirate starbase, and it's clear that you cannot do anything but negotiate with these guys some kind of peaceful passage. But if you had six friends and each one of you had two ships each, you might be able to take that thing. You might be able to get a big bounty for taking that thing down. So you can play through the game single player, but there'd definitely be some things that you could do with other players if you wanted to come back and just specifically attack that particular spot. She said, hey, guys, let's get together and take out that pirate base.
Jim, I think we both need to get this game.
Yep.
I don't think there's a question.
Oh, now, yeah. Well, but will I be able to get you to play it with me, though? See, to date, the only game that I have ever gotten Brian to play was MechWarrior Online, and that was after about 6 months of begging. He played once. He said it was the best fun he'd ever had. He'd never do it again.
I did not say it was the best fun I'd ever had. I did not lavish that kind of praise upon it. But I did have a good time. But, yeah, no, I'm usually busy playing my own thing.
Yep.
But,
maybe we'll do something, you know, whereby we somehow hack his account so he gets chased down by his pirate captain all the time. So he's going to be begging for your help, you know. So
Now, like with the co-op, besides having someone else's ship come in to help, can more than two players be on the same ship at the same time?
You know, I don't think we've talked about that.
Technically, we can do it. Whether it's a good idea, I'm not so sure. One thing we have been discussing is, say you're trying to board this big dreadnought or whatever, you know, and it has lots of marines. You might send the marines over, I might send them, and we might be able to coordinate our attack boarding operation. And that's where we see that it could be really interesting, especially, like, I think the four of us are playing together. Two of us board that dreadnought, and the two others are holding off the enemy reinforcements until we can capture and take the dreadnought, or blow it up, or steal some documents, or whatever, you know? So that could be interesting, but whether we would want you to individually control different turrets and so forth, I'm not sure if that's the experience we're going for. Technically, okay. We can do it. Whether it works, we're not so sure.
Yeah, we wouldn't want people fighting over the wheel.
that's true. I mean, usually with games that allow you to do that, seems like that stuff's set up ahead of time. So I don't know if it could have the drop-in thing you're talking about. Now, how many players will this thing support?
What we are planning for is 1 to 6 players, because that's a bit similar to what you would expect in an MMO, you know, in a group, if you're playing in a group. We might add, you know, like endgame content later, or expansion packs or something, where you can have like even bigger number of players. That will be a bit down to balancing and playtesting, and also what the community wants, you know.
Well, now you mentioned the endgame stuff. How does one win the game?
So there is going to be a storyline that you can take in different directions, you know, based on whether you want to be a pirate, whether you want to be loyal to the Empress, whether you want to be joining some other factions. Okay. And that will come to a conclusion. I guess a good example there is Skyrim, you know, where it is a sandbox thing,
right.
Kind of.
Okay, sure.
And you can complete the main story, but you can still continue playing after that.
Very cool.
And we will probably have, you know, content that's specifically geared for players who have finished the main campaign to really keep challenging them even after they've completed the main campaign. Because there's still star bases and factions to fight and conquer and ally with, and maybe ancient derelict ships you can explore and try to find, you know.
Now, this game is a mix of procedurally generated stuff and hand-crafted stuff. Did I read that right? Now, how does that work? Like, what, like, is a system generated procedurally, but maybe a space station might be handcrafted with a specific mission that pops in there? Is that, like, how does that work? How does that mix exactly?
So, again, I'll just use the example from Pirates, you know, where we have this world that kind of feels alive. There's ships going everywhere. They're doing convoy duties. They're hunting down pirates. There's, like, naval squadrons patrolling. There's even pirates trying to hunt down other ships. Right. So that will be kind of like we see that as a bit of a procedural thing. And what happens where it ties into which factions control which areas as well. And your game might develop very differently from my game, you know, because we will have different starting conditions that might vary from game to game.
Right.
Then you have the player's influence, which is going to impact this. But yeah, we're going to have areas on the kind of world map, so to speak, that will have procedural content in them that might also update over time.
But then we'll definitely have some stuff that we handcraft because there's a story we want to tell.
Okay. This all sounds insanely exciting. When do you think it'll be ready for people to actually, you know, play? Like, even in an alpha form, when do you think it might be ready for people to actually get their grubby mitts on it?
So we already have presented the prologue, you know, and the ship designer, and these are tools we will be constantly updating throughout development.
Okay.
So if you pledge to the, I think it's the $40 tier or higher, you will get the first expansion pack included in the price, and you will also get access to these as like early access. So we'll keep updating them and share them to get the additional feedback. So far we plan to have the alpha ready in Q4 2014.
Oh, wow. Okay.
with an estimated launch in Q1 2015.
Oh, so it's a ways whether away.
Whether we start with like an early access sooner, that's up for discussion. One example that is pretty good is, I'm not sure, are you aware of Iron Tower Studios? They have a game called Age of Decadence. It's an RPG.
Yes, I have heard of that one.
Yeah, they did kind of like a combat demo very early. They had like over 1.5 years before they were planning on launching. And we might do something similar to that, you know, to start getting feedback very early from the community.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad, like, I'm glad that we came to the community at this stage with the concept that we had, not having so much stuff developed so far, because it really has given us some insight into what people really want.
Right.
And it gave us an opportunity to kind of polish the stone that we've got going on here.
Right.
As long as you don't crowdsource your development, as long as you keep with your vision, then... I have seen some examples of that where they just listen to what everyone has to say, and the game turns out awful because they listen to whatever everyone has to say.
No, we're a group that likes constructive criticism, but we know that a vision can't happen if we don't put our foot down and shoot from the hip.
Now you guys have started pretty early. I want to ask, how do you feel about this whole alpha access, beta access, transparent thing going on? I mean, I think it's great, but how is that working out for you guys who are actually in the thick of it?
Do you mean like looking forward, like what we expect to
hear? Well, not just that, but like, because us as fans have never before had the access to developers that we have today.
Uh-huh.
And that just fascinates me. So, like, Ollie, you've been doing this for a while. Like, how does it feel having eyes on your project this early in the game versus, like, a much more closed system? Like, how's it feeling?
Well, first of all, getting feedback sooner is, you know, better in terms of either reassuring you that you are on the right track or you know that you'll have time to make adjustments now instead of being surprised when you launch something later without having gotten any feedback. My background, you know, is from MMOs, and MMOs are a bit different. Yes, of course, you could have like a marketing beta or whatever, but usually you would start sooner than that and get feedback from like close beta testing or closed alpha and stuff. So I guess it's a bit different from that sense. I really like that transparency in terms of, as Garrett mentioned, being able to gain insight into what players are looking for. And we're gamers too, you know. We just like this approach. We like this transparency.
No, yeah.
You know, for me, I have to say, being a gamer and getting alpha access, on some regard, it's kind of nice because you can feel like you're part of the development, although I do that for a living.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's different types. I think that there's some people who just want to be in the know about all the little bits and feel like they influenced the outcome. And for them, that's great. I think that also people need to be aware of what type of person they are. And they might be the type of person who doesn't want to know anything about it except for that they want to play it. And that when they finally get to play the finished product, they're going to be happy with it. They're going to be surprised. It's going to be wonderful. Mm. But we know that having all eyes on all the bits is good. I know that for as far as us being able to create the best project. But I do think that there's some things that we probably need to keep secret so that people don't know everything by the time they get to play the game. Because that's part of the exploration.
Right,
you want to be surprised when you run into something.
I mean, can you imagine if Starflight was crowdfunded today? Did you guys play Starflight at all?
I don't think I ever played Starflight.
Oh, Starflight,
mid 80s open space role playing game. Amazing story, one of the best twists in gaming I've ever seen in my damned life.
Yeah,
but I think that game, what if everyone knew everything about that game? For example, or Free Space 2, or TIE Fighter even. You know, there are some games that, why would you want to know everything right from the get-go? That would just ruin some of those moments, you know, those emotional moments.
Well,
yeah, TIE Fighter is one of my all-time favorite games, I have to say.
Yeah. such good stuff. No, I'm playing through it right now, and it's aged. I mean, it's aged quite well.
Yeah, you're playing the SVGA version, I guess?
Yeah, I'm playing the original DOS
CD-ROM version. Yeah.
I don't understand why there hasn't been a TIE Fighter 2 remake.
I think if anyone but Larry Holland did it, it might be crap.
I think even if Larry Holland did it, it might be crap because of later games. So
Breach Commander, yeah.
No, I think the last game Totally Games did, wasn't it
it was a World War II flight sim thing on the Xbox.
No, it was wasn't it a bull riding simulator?
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even making that up. It was like a bull riding game.
You know what I keep waiting on? I want a starship game where you fly around to different planets and then you beam down and you catch Pokemon and make them fight each other on the holodeck.
Dude, that's a Kickstarter waiting. That's a Kickstarter waiting to happen, dude.
So what's the title going to be?
I don't know. Well, you know, instead of cute little Pokemons, they could actually be like humans and Klingons and whatever. And then you're like some kind of galactic overlord that sees people as ants, and you just make
them fight. By the time you're done, you realize you're a slave trader, and
it starts
out all cute, but then you start the intergalactic slave.
No, it'll be a prequel to how Q turned into an asshole, basically, on self-exploration. Like, how Q turned into a prick. Yeah, it just makes
sense. And at the end, you host a trivia game.
To sports. Oh, God.
Kind of, yeah.
What was that, LA?
To me, it sounds like an expansion to Spore.
Oh, I still haven't played that. People have told me the space part of that is actually worthwhile. I don't know whether to believe them or not.
You know what? I got to the space part. I got to the space part, and it was fun kind of getting around. But at some point, I wanted to build a fleet. Mm. At some point, I wanted more than one ship so that I could tell my to do stuff that I didn't want to do. Because there's lots of planets. There's lots of systems in that thing. And the goal is to get to the center of the galaxy. And it just kind of becomes monotonous because you can't kind of automate some of the things that you need to do, like collecting money and all that. Mm. Anyway,
that doesn't sound fun. Well, it was for a while, though. You had a good time with it for a while, at least.
I played it till the end. There's plenty of games I don't play to the end, but it might have been. I don't know why I played it to the end. I played it to the end.
No, that says something about it because I never finish games, and so if you say you don't finish every game and you played that and you finish that one, that's
When the game starts feeling like a chore, I stop playing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally with you there. Well, this sounds like a good place to wrap things up. We've been talking for an hour and a half, guys.
Oh wow,
that's awesome. That's crazy. And it's probably almost 4 a.m. where you are, Ole, right?
Yeah, 3:40. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hey, whenever you were working on Conan for Funcom, were you in the Raleigh office or did you work from Europe?
Oslo office.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that they had an office over. Okay.
That's where the main development took place.
Oh, all right. Because I live right down the street from the Raleigh office, so not too far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Raleigh has – I'm not sure how the organization is now, but it used to have all customer support and QA was located there.
Oh, okay. Oh, was that the last project that you worked on with them? Or did you – Secret World?
I worked on Conan from 2005 to 2008, and from 2008 to 2012, I worked on The Secret World.
Oh, okay.
Jared, what have you worked on? Have you worked on anything else besides this?
Well, this is my art director debut, but I have been a freelancer for quite a few years, working on all sorts of random different things for all sorts of random different companies. Probably nothing that anyone's heard, I worked for IGN, making fun. I worked with them for a while.
Oh, okay.
So the art that you do, are you in it from like the concept art through like character design and things like that, or do you get into the UI as well, or what? Because I got a buddy that does UI stuff, but that's like his thing, you know. It's like because he worked on MMOs as well, and he did like the UI stuff for Star Trek Online and Champions and that. So, it's like that was his role, was nothing but UI. I figure a small team, you got to have you're kind of like everything, right?
Yeah, well, I can't design UI as far as the functionality, but I definitely put a lot of effort into basically anything visual with the game. Something I did, and even the 3D guy, I kicked his ass quite a bit to get what he got, but he did great. finally getting the captain on. He did a great job.
So if someone designs the UI workflow, you'll design the pretty buttons we push to make it all work?
Yeah. Well, yeah. If we get, getting completely funded will allow us to hire some people to kind of offload some of my responsibilities, but definitely I'll be in charge of making sure everything looks pretty. That's what I've been doing so far. I've been designing all the little bits and buttons. Everything you guys see that looks like it is a piece of art or a piece of metal or something like that, I did that. So,
oh, groovy.
Yeah, lots of little things.
It looks pretty good. You guys basically forced me to up my pledge today. I doubled it, basically.
We held you
thank you.
So good job. I don't back everything, but I do back a lot. And
yes, he does. He backs everything.
Yeah, I do, but no, I don't back everything. I've seen some space games. I swear there was a space game Kickstarter, and the guys who did the video, they started talking in sync at first, like, hello, we are such and such, and we want to make your game for you. But it was two guys saying it at the same time, and that was just creepy, Like, no, people.
We are robots.
Yeah, no, people. You have to take this seriously, but you also have to be human beings. But I work in internet marketing, so I kind of have an instinct for what works and what doesn't. You guys have put together a very good campaign.
Thank you. Can I ask you one question there, by the way?
Sure.
Just like when we were wrapping up, because we've gotten some feedback from people who are kind of linking our art direction a bit to, for example, Mass Effect. But for example, the captain officer that we have, he has this kind of golden buttons going on, and our inspiration there is actually like 18th century.
I see
like
that. Napoleonic I see era. That. I like that a lot. Yeah.
But I'm not sure if we're if people are actually catching that one, because we're doing a couple of these subtle things that are like have historical references. We're not sure if people see it.
Well,
but also for the trailer, we got some feedback that people have a bit of trouble understanding the voice actress. And that voice actress is actually she's Russian. She lives in Spain, and she did the voice in English, Spanish, and Russian. And in both Spanish and English, she's doing quite an accent. How did you react to that?
I'm watching a little of it right now.
Because people have been asking, like, wow, who did you use for voice acting, And the thing is, the Empress is supposed to be Russian. She is of the Romanov. So her mother tongue would be Russian, even in 1,500 years into the future, which is why she speaks English with a Russian accent.
Well, I'm watching it with my eyes closed, so I don't read the captioning. And I understand exactly what she's saying. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, Russian and Australian accents are my kryptonite. Because so I won't tell you how I reacted to it, but it was embarrassing.
No, I understood her just fine. It was a great accent. It really added flair.
Yeah, we kind of chuckle a little bit when someone's like, "Oh, I hate these fake Russian accents."
Oh, like, what? That was fake. No, you could if it was fake, it was very well done. I couldn't tell it was fake. That's how good that was, I thought. Now,
yeah, I would recommend checking out the Russian version of it, because she's much more like pissed off in the Russian version. So if you just want to listen to her voice, the Russian one is really, really cool.
How do you do that? How do you check out the Russian version?
Yeah, you can check the YouTube channel. We have a link.
I see. Okay, I didn't know if there was a way to switch the language.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful listening to it in Russian. It is really nice to listen to it in Russian.
Now, I gotta say, this Mandate Captain, you were asking about the uniform. If you want people to get that he's like a sailor captain from like the 18th and 19th century, make the hat a try, like a more of a tri-point, a trifold, tri-point thing.
Or tricorn hat?
Tricorn hat, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Or give him those big shoulder boards with tassels. Yeah.
No, the rest of the outfit works.
Are you talking about the guy in the black outfit with the boots and the hat?
Oh, and there need to be tails.
Tails. No, see, when I saw that, I thought kind of like space fascist sort of thing. Like seriously, because I thought, well, there's sort of a Russian thing going on here, but like a Russian hat would have been like a bigger hat, because they like big hats.
A much taller hat, yeah.
No, they're just kind of fatter hats.
I totally see the British Age of Sail thing, but I think if you want to make that much more apparent, you add the tri-corner hat, and you maybe add tails, like a coat, because they wore a coat, like, to the coat. It looks like he's more wearing, like, a uniform top shirt thing. Make it more look like a coat, and I think, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that if you're trying to go for that, that's what I would recommend. But I totally see what you're going for there, and I dig it.
Well, we're gonna have customization in the uniform as well. So,
ooh, nice. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That the mandate captain thing. I think
it looks like he's wearing blue glasses.
Well, no, I like that. But I'm just saying, like, if you put a silver skull on that helmet, he's kind of Nazi, right? So I don't know if maybe space Nazis, which is second only to space pirates and space zombies in my lexicon of awesome.
Then again, though, when you'll be able to do character customization. So if you were able to make this guy pink, would you still have that association?
No. That would be Star Fairies. But
there would be some design flourishes that change based on the factions that you eventually ally with.
Like face tattoos and stuff like that.
Yeah, like a big dragon.
Yeah, if that uniform wasn't gray or black, because I'm conditioned by World War II and Star Wars, and also Warhammer 40K, right? So I see that guy, and I think Warhammer 40K Commissar, he's going to shoot somebody in the head. So,
oh, Jesus.
I don't know, Brian.
On that note, on that fun note of Nazis.
Did I just God note? In the podcast? I'm sorry.
just the word Nazi has a connotation that like makes people go ooh or So I don't know.
We should add a disclaimer. We're talking about grammar Nazis, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Well, totally yep. Grammar Nazis.
You'll correct your spelling.
Yep.
9 millimeters at a time.
You'll get grammar quests.
If you write a sentence wrong, they will warp in and shoot the crap out of you.
Yeah.
And they'll shoot you with red squiggly beams, and they. Okay. Oh my God, I have to stop. All right, gentlemen. Ole, Garrett. It's been
a pleasure
talking to you.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. It's been a pleasure.
For almost 2 hours. Holy crap. But it is.
Who knows? Maybe we'll do a follow up in a couple of weeks. You know, who knows?
Maybe we will do a follow up after. How long the Kickstarter has? A month and a half to go.
We'll catch you at the midpoint. And please make Pokemon a stretch goal.
Oh my!
Because
or maybe at least pets. You Tribbles. Know, like have a mascot. Like, give your ship a mascot, and what the mascot will be your dog or your parakeet or whatever. That'll be the ship mascot.
Can I just mention that on the 11th of October update that we have on the Kickstarter site, there is this picture with all the different factions, and all the way on the right on that picture, you will see this special dog. And we actually added this
what it
dog.
Is. You can't tell people what it is.
Okay, we can't tell you what it is. People need to figure it out, but it's linked to – it's historical.
I'm looking for this picture. Is
it's right under the captain. There's that lineup of the usual suspects.
I see that. I see a little doggy.
And that's not a random doggy.
Is it like a telepath doggy or a cybernetic doggy?
No, it's
let me just say that
you
see which faction it's standing next to, right?
Is that the Romanov faction?
Yes.
Oh.
There is a tick there.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to look up some history because something's twinging at my brain that I should know what you're talking about. Anyway, I do like the looks of all these guys. Who are the guys, the two guys who look like in the green and gold outfits next to the Romanovs? Who are they?
The Great Arcs?
Yeah, I can't. Oh, can I click this picture and make it bigger? Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, the Great Arcs. I love those outfits.
They're space dwarves, actually.
I love those. Especially, is that, I think, the woman's outfit? I don't know why. Something about the kind of, it looks like an insect shell almost. I just dig that.
Well, yeah, you know, I am, we're all inspired by RPGs, and I figured, why not bring some of that, bleed some of that into the future as well? I mean,
oh, why not? Yeah, totally.
So, they're not technically dwarves, but they're.
Are they asteroid miners?
Yeah, they're the metal types. They got lots of access to metal, but they are subjugated in some ways and kind of have it out for the Romanovs.
I gotta say that Romanov dude has a fantastic beard.
Check his hand.
He's holding what looks like the Enterprise.
Yes,
in his hand.
It's a bit of a, just a nod, you know. To...
It looks like the, I can't tell which Enterprise it is, but maybe the Enterprise, maybe? It's hard to tell. But yeah, anyway, wow. So let's wrap this up. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep trying to.
Yeah, I've been trying to. We keep talking. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm terrible at wrapping things up. I'm anyway. So, gentlemen, again, thank you for joining us. It has been a pleasure. We have learned so much about the game. Who knows? I might bump up my pledge again. I don't know. One of these has a soundtrack in it, doesn't it? One of them does. There we go.
Actually, you get it even at 20, you get the soundtrack.
I see that now. Okay, I'm already good with this. I love soundtracks. Okay, but folks, it's the mandate, and it's not a mandate. It's the mandate.
Mandate.
It's just, let's be clear on that.
Well, I have to confess, at first I thought that it was some sort of dating simulation. I was just this is going to be really weird.
Game about getting health insurance.
Yeah. Oh, that's wow. Wow, yeah, this is during the shutdown, so yeah.
We didn't plan that.
No, I won't plan that.
Fingers crossed you get your Blu-ray tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Oh, God, thank you. It got delivered. I saw it got delivered about an hour ago. So even if I had left work at the normal time, I wouldn't have gotten
the night shift is sitting around watching your Blu-ray.
Son of a bitch!
Yeah.
Did you guys see Pacific Rim, by the way? Did everyone?
Yes.
Was it not the greatest movie of the year?
Just yeah, my mind was blown. It was amazing.
Right? Did you see it in IMAX?
I think I did.
Ah, yes. No wonder your mind was blown.
You know, it wasn't until I got to watch it at home that it finally hit me that it's just like, wow, they finally made something like this. You know, I couldn't when I was in the theater and I'm watching it and I'm just like, well, of course, it's awesome and this is exactly what I expected. But then, like months later, I get to see it again and I'm just blown away that it even exists. Like that could have gotten made in Hollywood at the budget level that it did. And honestly, the Blu-ray, I'm just saying this to rub it in for Brian. The Blu-ray, it is so better looking at home than it was in
the
theater.
I've heard. I've heard it's a demo quality Blu-ray. That's what I've heard. That's what I've read. So I need it. I need it so bad. Okay, on that note, I'll be watching something else tonight, I guess. Maybe Batman. I don't know.
No, I can give you a link to the Super Robot Red Baron.
That's okay. No.
That's my DVDs just showed up today. I'm all giddy. I'm gonna go watch that.
Okay. Yay.
It's that giant robot trash from Japan in 1974.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Okay, well, on that fun note, folks, good night. Go to the mandate on Kickstarter. We'll be linking it in the thing, in the show notes. But go there and pledge because it sounds awesome. And oh, you guys passed 98,000 as we were talking.
Sweet.
Good job. Nice.
Very nice.
We did it. We pushed them over the
campaign.
And, but yeah, go find the mandate. It looks awesome. It looks like a fantastic game that doesn't just focus on combat all the time, which is great. And go throw some money at them because we need more space games, especially more space games that don't focus on combat all the time. So guys, again, thank you so much for joining us, folks. Thank you for listening. Everyone, have a good night.
Hey, you could make it like you could make it like Dungeon Keeper too, right?
Where
you
have to build this thing. Are we just gonna keep going?
I'm just thinking like mandate, right? And then you could build like a bowling alley on the ship, right? And then that would be like a recreational thing for the crew. Bowling could be a kickstart goal.
If you're gonna have morale on the ships, you do have to have recreational areas like a 10 forward and a holiday.
Yeah, see, it could be totally like Dungeon Keeper. And if you're the evil captain that I anticipate being, then you could also have like a torture chamber or something where
torture
you send
chamber, yeah.
Right,
yeah, you're mistress of pain and
exactly, and she'll have to. Oh yeah, Garrett, get on that. We need something. We need a girl in like thigh high jack boots.
Oh my god.
Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah.
So good.
And the whip. Yeah, the beatings will continue until morale improves. She can just walk around the ship saying that. And
but you could turn off gravity in her own little torture chamber to make things really interesting.
Mm.
There you go. Why did I think that? I don't know. I'm going down a wrong path. Okay. Let's stop this.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Oh yeah, one more thing.
Oh my god.
Good night.
I'm gonna go play with my Gypsy Danger action figure because I have one. I'm just gonna go play with it right now because I'm gonna console myself
with your dolls.
With my dolls.
Yes.
I'm gonna have my Gypsy Danger fight my Toothless.
I used to have a bunch of BattleTech figures because I played BattleTech like it was a religion, you know.
In the 20s. Sure.
But my mom referred to them as my baby dolls.
As your baby. Oh.
She's like, oh, are you downstairs painting your baby dolls again? She made it so mature. You know, that.
Oh God!
Thanks for those years of pain, Mom.
That's great. That's great, Jim's mom. That's great. Anyway,
I don't have a complex.
Are you still recording? Are you still doing this?
I'll cut it.
Bye, everybody. Good night. No, keep all this. This is gold. This is gold right here. Just keep everything.
See you guys later.
Take it easy. Bye bye.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing.
Down, but I see only one. Try to think I'm over you. I find I've just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no more in the light.